The abortion bill is on its way to the governor. What will the next abortion battle be about? Guns in school, why the debate has a new focus, expanding school vouchers, sentencing reform, and another politician switches his position on gay marriage. That plus Operation Cookie Drop and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 12,
2013. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, a bill creating new abortion restrictions is on its way to Governor Pence, who said that he's looking forward to signing the bill that regulates use of the abortion pill known as RU486. The vote in the state Senate was 35-14 to send the bill to the governor's desk. It's aimed at a Lafayette clinic where the abortion pill is administered. Under the bill, that clinic must meet the same guidelines as a surgical clinic, and Planned Parenthood says it means that abortions will no longer be performed there. Author Travis Holdman says it's about women's health. Here he is, followed by Senator Benita Becker and Senator Mark Stoops.
It is about a woman's safety in the administration of this drug.
What you're doing with this piece of legislation is making it much more difficult for a woman who has been raped, who has been a victim of incest, or a woman whose life is at stake, make it much more difficult for them to have access to needed abortions in those cases.
And I believe that is the only purpose of this bill, to limit women's reproductive rights in Indiana.
Will a new law reduce the number of abortions in Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, what will be the effect of the new law?
I don't think it'll have any effect. I think it'll be struck down. I mean, all this is an attempt by Travis Holdman to impose his religious views on other people. It has no medical merit. That pill is available through the internet right now. And all he's trying to do is to put his religious, make everybody follow his religious views. You know, it's, you can be opposed to abortion, okay, and many people are. But that doesn't mean that you can impose your views on someone else, and that's exactly what he's doing. He has more respect for private property than he does a woman's own privacy, and he doesn't care who he hurts in the process. He wants everybody to think the way he does.
If the law is upheld, it means that somebody seeking an abortion in Lafayette will have to go to Merrillville or Indianapolis. Do you think that will have an effect?
I don't think it's going to change the numbers very much in the state. The seven legislators who represent Tippecanoe County all voted for it, and there were Republicans and Democrats who represent Tippecanoe County. And there were Republicans and Democrats both who voted for this piece of legislation in both houses. So I think there's pretty strong sentiment about this issue in both houses, and that was shown in the votes that were taking place in both places.
35-14 in the Senate. This is just the latest in any number of abortion debates at the State House, and I anticipate that there will be another one next year or the year after.
I think that's the safest bet that there is. And we've talked about this before. These are not happening in isolation. This is not just legislation that some Indiana lawmaker wakes up one morning and says, I'm going to draft or have drafted a bill about X, Y, or Z. You look at these are boilerplate bills that in many cases are being debated, and where enacted, they're being adjudicated in courts and in general assemblies across the country, almost to a T. I think it's almost identical language in many cases. So as long as, well, I don't see, I would say until the Supreme Court weighs in again, but it's weighed in several times now, the U.S. Supreme Court, and that hasn't certainly ended the debate. So I think it's your assessment, Jim, is exactly right. It will continue. But as far as the Lafayette, I think if you go to Planned Parenthood, you would need to go to either Merrillville or Indianapolis, but I believe there is an exception in the law for physicians' offices, so I think you could
There was testimony that no physicians have administered the abortion pill.
Okay, well, then it's ironic that if the concern is to be able to have a transfusion, you can't get one in a doctor's office either, which is transparent on its face, is what he's trying to do.
Which doesn't have to meet the new guidelines in the bill. You're right. You're right. Okay, but with regard to the overall abortion debate, Mitch Daniels was a guy who was encouraging people to leave social issues alone. Mike Pence is pro-life. His appearance in the governor's office likely will encourage more of this.
Well, I would say that his approach is very much different than Mitch Daniels, who I believe also said that he was pro-life, but his view was that social issues were to take back seat to other issues like economic development or job creation or tax policy, whatever. And I think that's what's interesting about this year. But I was thinking about this earlier today. Almost 20 years ago, I remember sitting in some of those very same committee rooms over abortion issues, and it's the one that just continues to go on and is continually argued on both sides. And so I think the difference is exactly the approach. Governor Pence has not really said much on this issue, except that he looks forward to signing the bill. And I do think that encourages then more of this in the legislature.
And just if I could.
By all means.
Well, but the governor and legislative leaders, they've all said that this session is to be about jobs and education, and yet this one got through more quickly than.
That is what you call a bait and switch. What they're interested in, and especially the Tea Party members of the agenda, and Mike Pence is one of them, are the social issues. And, you know, when you put time and effort and work into bills like this, it means there's less time to do the things that should be being done for this state: infrastructure, education, job development, what they say they want. But then when they get in there, you know, you talk about they're supposed to be conservatives. They're supposed to not want government intrusion into anybody's life except when absolutely necessary, except when it furthers their agenda.
I reiterate again that there were Republicans and Democrats who voted for this legislation in both houses. It is not R&D. It's about this issue and deep-seated feelings people have on it. I think they've actually shown a lot of restraint compared to what's going on in other states like South Dakota or North Dakota,
Kansas.
And Kansas and other places compared to what's going on in those places based on the kind of majorities that the Republicans have in both houses and the amount of sentiment there is in the state for these issues.
I think some people, though, would just appreciate saying what it is. If this is designed to lessen the availability or accessibility of abortion, in this case, a pharmacological abortion, say that, as some states, the bills are labeled something to that effect. But here, safety, okay. Health. And yeah. I think that maybe.
I believe Travis Holtmann when he says that. If you know Travis Holtmann, you'll know that's what he's all about.
Then he speaks the truth, because what he said is what he wants to do is impose his religious views.
What he wants to do
is he's
interested in the safety of the woman.
No, he's not. He's interested in imposing.
For you to judge him.
He said,
don't judge his lips.
He wants to impose.
You know better
his
what he thinks
views.
Than he does?
No, he said it.
Well, you don't know.
He said it.
Next up. Next up, the bill calling for an armed guard in every Indiana school continues to be the subject of spirited debate at the State House. The bill that could lead to armed teachers won bipartisan support in a committee this week, where it passed 16-7. The bill was amended first so that a school district can seek a waiver to avoid the mandate for guns in schools. That did nothing to keep opponents from calling it asinine and wrong. And shortly after the vote, a new opponent surfaced, Attorney General Greg Zeller. The bill that now includes the armed guard mandate, or did anyway, began as his bill.
My intent is to try to get people to refocus on the value of school resource officers, law enforcement in the schools.
Who may or may not have a gun.
May or may not.
We could solve our problem and protect our schools. But to sit there and keep our heads in the sand is only leaving our children and our educators defenseless.
That's State Representative Jim Lucas, who came up with the mandate. Now, since he made that testimony in the Ways and Means Committee, this bill went to the floor where an amendment was passed that would send it to a study committee.
It took it out.
It's too hot to handle.
Took out the mandatory, because they talked about it.
Took out all the talk about, this is a bill about resource officers,
right,
who, as the Attorney General said, may or may not be armed. It took out all the protection officers who are required to be armed.
And so they're going to have a study committee on this. The board is going to make a recommendation by December, I think December 1st of this year. Look, coming off the tragedy that you had on the East Coast, clearly this is a debate that's going on in every state in the United States, and it should. Very clearly. And, you know, there are people who are trying to figure out where that line is. I mean, we're not living in Norman Rockwell's America anymore, and people are really starting to understand that. They don't want to have to deal with the issue of public safety in these schools to any harsh degree, but where do you draw that line? Do you have metal detectors at every door? Do you do the background checks people are talking about? Gun control, all of that is in play. All of that is being debated as we speak in every state in the union, and I think they were smart to draw back and say, let's talk about this more over the summer and figure out what we're going to do about this thing, and that's exactly what happened here.
And House Speaker Brian Bosma said that a lot of people misunderstood this bill, but Representative Lucas said that he believes that there are enough teachers who belong to the NRA and own guns and have gun training that would volunteer to do this, that it wouldn't cost
very much. I'm sick of the NRA setting policy in our legislature. I'm sick of it. Okay.
Well, if the they want to do,
I don't care. I mean, he's obviously in the NRA's pocket. If you wanted to have, if you wanted to have a meaningful discussion on this, you would do what Connecticut and what Colorado have done. And you talk about the background checks, and you talk about limiting magazine size. These same people who want to arm everybody in the public school system have no interest in discussing that. Talk about
that's
having your head in the sand.
Well,
oh, yeah, we'll
we
see.
John, we talked last week about what might happen while Brian Bosma was out on sick leave. This came up.
Yeah.
And when Brian Bosma came back, the Republicans went to a four-hour caucus, and it went away. You think Brian Bosma had a bearing on this?
Let's just say I don't think there was a coincidence. I think that Brian Bosma has worked very hard during this session to control the agenda and to make it about what his priorities were at the very beginning. And I don't think even from the hospital bed that he was in, he missed the furor that came up around the issue when that was inserted, when the gun proposal was inserted in that bill. The right approach is to think very carefully about this. It was a knee-jerk reaction that was able to get in at a time because the leadership wasn't paying attention, apparently. And it's been taken out so that they can do the right thing, and that is to make a study of this issue and see what's the right thing to do.
How much influence do you think Greg Zeller had on the outcome here?
Oh, I think he clearly had influence. He was very outspoken about this. He was very supportive initially in the session about the notion of having proper funding so that some of the resources would be available for those schools that wanted to enhance security and have additional training. And that's ultimately probably where this will end up, with that $10 million of additional funding. And in the end, I think it was a coalition, if you will. You had Greg Zeller, certainly as Attorney General. You had the governor, who in this case was actually in agreement with, say, Glenda Ritz, the Democratic state superintendent of public
instruction.
Right. I mean, yeah,
they're local.
Right. But I mean, in that, and that's what really where the distinction or where the friction was. It was this notion that schools would be required to have it, and that's what you have people all over the board on gun issues and gun safety. But when you tell a school district or a school you've got to have an armed guard, that's what brought together all of these individuals who might not see eye to eye on the broader issue.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, should every school in Indiana have an armed guard? 62% said yes, 23% said no, 15% said it should be an option. This week's question is, should marijuana penalties in Indiana be weaker or stronger? Your choices are A, weaker, B, stronger, or C, no change is required. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. More on sentences in just a minute. But first, more Indiana school children will get the opportunity to go to private schools under a bill passed by the state Senate this week. The bill passed on a 27-23 vote expands the state school voucher program. New vouchers will be available to the siblings of students who already receive a voucher. Those siblings would no longer have to spend a year in public school in order to qualify. New vouchers would also be available to students who live in a school district where there is a failing school.
We want parents to get involved. What better way than to allow them, for once, to choose where to send their kids to school?
We can't keep doing this without some caps on either the number of students or the amount of money that we're willing to spend.
That's Senator Karen Tallien, preceded by Senator Carlin Yoder, John Katzenberger, Senator David Long, said some of the opposition to that bill came as a result of education reform fatigue. Has the pace been too fast?
Well, it certainly has been rapid. We've seen an awful lot of change in the last few sessions. And I think if that's what he is feeling, I believe him because he's got his finger on the pulse. And I think that makes some sense. We've talked before about the need to look at the effect of vouchers in particular on the way schools are funded and the way the money is being redistributed around the state. And I think even the people who are in favor of expanding the school voucher program would like to see that study undertaken, because you need to understand the ramifications in order to make sure that it's done in an orderly fashion, so that even proponents understand if it gets ahead of itself, it hurts the program and then could damage it in the long run. So we really need to take a longer view of this, and this is a good time for it.
At this point, we're looking at an expansion, but it's a smaller expansion than what the House wanted. Will the Senate get its way?
I think so. I mean, you look at the people who certainly have more than a little bit of a say in this, whether it's Senator Dennis Cruz, who chairs the Senate Education Committee, or Luke Kenley, who, of course,
holds
to a large extent controls the purse strings. And these are individuals who have said, basically reflected, their opinions reflect what has been said here, that, you know, we did a few things. We did this most significant in the country reform back in 2011. And really, we haven't had a chance, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but we haven't had a chance to see how this is going to play out. So let's take this one step and see what happens. And when you talk about fatigue, Jim, I think that's exactly right. But it's not just because the speed with which we got from, you know, say 2011 to now, it's the marathon fatigue. I've made the argument that education reform has been a front burner issue back to Bob Orr's A-plus program
right.
for education. It was a priority for Evan Bayh, for Frank O'Bannon. I mean, it's Mitch Daniels. And so I think Hoosiers may say, well, it's all well and good to keep trying to go after the prize. They're probably saying, well, when do we finally cross the finish line here?
But it makes sense to see how this is working before you expand it too far, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think they did expand it too far. I think giving it to siblings of people who are or the children
this,
who already
this,
get
this
it.
Would take it from 9,000 to 12,000.
Siblings of children who already get it. And I've always said that, you know, you shouldn't be sentenced to a bad school just because of your geography. And this one changes it so that if you are stuck in a school.
But there's concern here that a high school student who lives in a district with a failing grade school could still qualify.
Exactly. So if they have a system, if they have a system that's failing,
they don't have to have a system that's failing.
They ought to be allowed to do it.
One school is all it takes.
Okay.
Well,
this is just, it's the bait and switch. You know, it's going to be give poor people in failing schools a chance to succeed, or give disabled kids in failing schools a chance to succeed. Now, you don't have to be in a failing school. You can be making $80,000 a year. You wouldn't even be necessarily failing in whatever school.
$80,000 a year in a family of four.
Right.
If you
Which
got
is
in,
more than the median income.
If you qualified at a lower level, and your income grew to that point, right?
Whatever. But you could be making $80,000 and have a subsidy. And the problem with this is, I assume that the goal is not to make the operators of private schools rich. I assume that the object of this is to make sure that kids do better in school. We're not even trying to track that. We're not even looking at whether that's the case.
Moving on, the state Senate gave its approval this week to a bill that would reduce prison sentences for many nonviolent criminals. The sentencing reform bill would also force violent criminals to serve larger portions of their sentences by reducing the amount of good time. One of the goals of the legislation is to eliminate the need for a new state prison.
Proposed changes will permit the offender population of our prisons to remain under 29,000 until at least the year 2022. It looks as though there would be no need for any prison for the foreseeable future.
Senator Brent Steele there, John Schwanis. The big debate here is over marijuana sentencing. Right now, it's a felony if you have an ounce of marijuana. The original version of this bill said you could have up to 10 pounds before it would be a felony. Now it says you can only have a third of an ounce. Are we going in the right direction?
I got to get all my calculations squared away here. Well, it's interesting that the lawmaker...
Most states in the country are relaxing marijuana
laws. They are.
Laws.
Yeah, 15 states, I think,
this would make ours more strict.
In the other direction, certainly. It's perhaps ironic, maybe not ironic, that the person whose snippet of video or audio you just played there was Brent Steele, who actually had authored earlier in the session, decriminalize at the very least marijuana,
right.
Took it off the table because he thought that the state, the mood was not right. And Karen Tallien, who I should point out you had in the sound bite before that, is very vocal in that direction. And these two, she has said, you know, she'll be back with that legislation again. I think this is probably counter where American culture is going, certainly, and you could say Indiana culture is maybe not necessarily
wants tougher marijuana laws.
He does, yeah.
If that's the case, it's a bad idea. You know, to throw people into prison for what essentially in most cases are nonviolent crimes, and I'm not naive. I know that the importation and the sales of drugs, including marijuana, can be a violent affair. But, you know, to bust people on the street for smoking some dope, and throwing them into prison for indeterminate amounts of times, or I should say determinate amounts of times, is really counterproductive, not just because it costs more money to put them into prison, but it also costs them their livelihoods and their chances in the future. And I think that we need to take a more common sense approach and be more reasonable about this for fiscal reasons and for social reasons.
Even if this passes in this form, there'll be another legislative session before it takes effect. Do you expect that the marijuana portion
I would hope that they'd have some common sense on this, and it shouldn't only be the marijuana part of it. I agree with John on that. Too large a percentage of our population is in jail. It started when you had the take away the discretion of the federal judges to sentence, and they have the bulk of the serious drug crimes. And the result is that we have overcrowded prisons. We have tens and thousands of people who will never be productive members of society when they get out and will resort to crime because they can't get jobs. It's crazy, and we need to change it.
Should we be tougher on marijuana?
Look, this is much more than about marijuana. This is about sentencing reform. And the whole idea is, Ann is exactly right about the overcrowding in our prison population and trying to do things that we can take the less offensive crimes out of the prison system so that we don't have this constant spending on this stuff. And the problem is everybody wants to be tough on crime. And when push comes to shove, you get prosecutors, you get judges, you get legislators, everybody involved in the process. Just when you think you've got an agreement after hundreds of hours of studying.
4 years.
Everybody said, I can't really vote for that because we're not tough enough on this or we're not tough enough.
And we're coming back next year if you do this.
That's right. So it'll be back again next year, and hopefully they're going to come to their senses on this one because it's just way too far.
Pete Visclosky changed his position on gay marriage this week. The longtime Democratic congressman took to Twitter to explain that he now supports marriage equality. Just last week, Senator Joe Donnelly changed his position in a statement posted on Facebook. Ann Delaney, how do you explain the timing here?
Well, yeah, I think there are a lot of people whose views on this subject are evolving. I mean, when you look at your polls, for example, that you have, I think people have changed. I've changed my attitude on it. So it's not surprising in that regard
before
at all.
Before, I guess.
Well, before he has, but that's okay. You know, sometimes it takes others a little longer to get there. But I think it's more about the fact that nobody forces anybody into a same-sex relationship, okay? But if they are in a same-sex relationship, should they be discriminated against? And I think that's the way people are analyzing it.
We're seeing some Republicans change their opinions here, not any in Indiana.
Well, yeah, I have no problem with any elected official changing their mind on a major issue over time and coming to a different conclusion. I think that's a natural process for a lot of people. What I disagreed with him on this one was he thinks the federal government should make this a mandatory situation nationwide, and I still think this is a states' rights issue and it should be.
We'll see what the Supreme Court says.
So then you disagree with your caucus that
I do think it should be a states' rights issue.
Okay,
and let
so
them
you
decide.
Disagree with the Republican-controlled House.
I'm just telling you.
Okay.
Finally, some Indiana soldiers got a sweet surprise this week thanks to the Girl Scouts. It's called Operation Cookie Drop. Deliveries were made at Stoutfield and Camp Atterbury. The Girl Scouts of Central Indiana delivered more than 77,000 packages of cookies to troops and members of the National Guard, Army Reserve, Marine Corps Reserves, and Naval Reserves. They'll take them back to their local armories. Mike McDaniel, do the Girl Scouts need to polish their image?
This is a great program. In fact, I participated in this program.
I did too.
I did more than my fair share of buying Girl Scout cookies. And every time I was asked, would you buy one for the troops? And absolutely. So this is a great idea, and they should be congratulated for doing something to recognize and say thank you to the men and women who protect this culture.
I like that I can help out the Girl Scouts and not have to take these home and look at them.
Or eat them.
Right. It's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.